Accession number 11607, Joe Neighbours, Reel 1.
Thursday, May 1st, 1986. I'm Judy Barger, and I'm in Girard, Ohio, visiting with Joe Neighbours, who lives in Poland, Ohio. We're going to be talking about her experiences as a flight nurse in World War II.
Okay, I'd like to start out by asking you some background questions, if I may. First, I'd like to know what school of nursing you attended.
St. Elizabeth's Hospital School of Nursing at Youngstown, Ohio.
Okay, and was this a large hospital? Would you consider it large as
today,
far as number of beds?
Yes, it's about an 800-bed hospital.
Okay.
It was about 500 at the time of my graduation.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1941.
Okay.
And as I graduated in June and took our state board in October of 41, and I had written to the Army Nurse Corps and wanted to join the regular Army Nurse Corps in 1941. And I didn't hear until January 7th, 1941, and they said that I was accepted into the Army Nurse Corps and that I would be, they would give me 30 days and I would be sent to Keesler Field,
mm-hmm.
Biloxi, Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I was inducted, into Keesler Field, Biloxi, Mississippi, January 1942.
Oh, okay. So this was very close then to the beginning
Pearl
of
Harbor.
The war.
It was yes, it was.
Just after Pearl Harbor.
Right after Pearl Harbor that I went in.
Had you known prior to your graduation that you wanted to enter the military?
That was my dream. I wanted to
dream?
Be a regular Army flight nurse.
But yes. So your dream was not just to be an Army nurse, but to be a flight nurse as well.
And they didn't have flight nurses at that time, I didn't think. But I just thought, oh, this would be wonderful if I could go in the service and go overseas and help all the bar boys. Never dreaming that there was going to be a war. And there was a war. So when Pearl Harbor came, I got my letter stating to clear up my affairs. And in 30 days, I gave my resignation to my hospital, School of Nursing, and left for Ohio and took a test there, I guess, to enter.
To enter the service.
And they said I qualified. So then they sent me to Keesler Field. And I think the pay then was $75 a month, would you believe?
I've heard something about, around that
month.
Number sounds just
yes.
about right. So you worked like maybe for a few months then as a graduate nurse
I worked
prior
for,
to actually entering the military.
From June until January, from June, 6 months it was.
Did you feel like you had gotten good nursing experiences in the hospital, say as a student nurse and as in that 6 month interim before you entered the military?
Yes, because, of course, we, at that time, as graduates, let me digress and say that we worked, once you became a junior training, we worked 12-hour shifts. We were not with any graduate nurse. We worked the floors for 12 hours at night.
We had charge of the wards.
We have charge of the wards every, so...
This was a diploma program.
This
back
was a 3-year diploma. That's right.
All of
diploma
that
program.
Experience.
That's right. We had all that floor, you know, really, actually floor duty experience.
Sure.
So we had that. And we had no vacations and no nights out as they have today. We had to be in at 9 o'clock every night, and we had our classes. We went to work at 7 o'clock at night, and then 7 o'clock the next morning you were off, and you would sleep from 7 to 11, and then you had classes from 11 to 3 or 4, and then you went back to work again every night.
So y'all get a lot less sleep than
that's
some of
correct.
Us today, maybe.
That's correct. That is. I do.
How long were you then at Keesler, which was your first assignment, before you were actually sent to...
Bowman Field.
Uh-huh.
Well, Keesler Field, we were there, let's see. When I got there were three other nurses there. That was the chief nurse was... Annie Johnson and Marion Gardner and Hibbing was the other girl's name. And they were all quite older than I was, so I was the fourth nurse that was there. And the boys lived in tents, and we didn't have our hospital, the base hospital built yet, so we had areas that were two wards. And in these two wards, we had everything under the sun, surgical, medical, feet problems. We had no medications there then because we're just building Kiesler Field. There were no quarters for us. We stayed down in Biloxi at the White House Hotel.
A hotel?
That's a hotel. That's where we lived for 3 months. We'd commute. They'd have an air transport for air. car would come and pick us up in the morning and bring us to the base and then take us back at night. And, of course, since I was the youngest, I was stuck with night duty, as you said. And no holidays, no Sundays. That was our routine for about 2 months. And then we got 13 nurses in from Boston. And so then that sort of helped out a lot.
So you were right.
I spent a year and a half. Let's see, it was January 42 until June of 43. And it was in June of 43, and we had this, Eileen Hickey was my friend. We kept on sticking our name up for everything that came in so we could get out of Kiesler Field.
They had a lot of lists at Kiesler, too.
So Captain Hamilton would refuse, and of course Annie Johnson said, "You don't want to go, Joe, you don't want to go." And we kept on sticking our names up, and our names were never accepted. So this one day we decided, well, let's go to Bowman Field. Let's go to flight school. That's where we really wanted to go. But we were afraid if we stuck our name up too soon that they would do the same thing, scratch our name off. So we waited until the last day. And when we knew he was going to collect this paper, we both stuck our name up.
Well, I guess the other lists weren't always for the flight course, flight nurse course, or Bowman.
No, they were for everywhere, other areas, but anywhere. We wanted to go to Europe. We wanted to go anywhere just to get out of our way from Kiesler. It was just terrible, humid, hot, and, of course, we just didn't like it. But, of course, that's where I met my husband, future husband.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yes.
So, I mean, like,
very first assignment in the military, and that's where I met my husband. He.
And did y'all marry at that time?
Or no, I waited. I met him in Christmas of 42, mm-hmm. and then I went to Bowman Field in June or July of 43, and he came up for graduation, and we got married after I graduated from Bowman.
Oh.
That was in October of 43.
Uh-huh.
And then they shipped us out to South Pacific. And poor Jim, he was stuck here in the States. He had to go back to Kiesler Field.
I think he said he was in the military, but then he stayed stateside.
He
for
stayed
the war
stateside,
while
yes,
overseas.
When I went overseas.
That must have been difficult.
It was, and we tried so many times to get. And then he'd go up to my dad's in Girard to visit up there when he'd have leave. And I guess they'd have an old crying session, my sister and everybody. About me being over in the South Pacific. And here he is, poor fellow. He said, just married and she's gone overseas. But we finally got back together again after the war.
After the war.
After the war, yeah.
Were you able to communicate with each other at all? Letters?
Just letters,
I guess
yes.
Phone calls weren't possible.
No phone calls, letters. And as I said, the one time that I asked this captain, who was Major Lasasso, it was another captain. He was very nice, and I said to him, he's going to be in California. I said, can't you get some way that I can have a delay en route, you know, and spend some time at the St. Francis Hotel. In fact, if you ever watch the that show Hotel on Wednesday night, that hotel, St. Gregory, looks just like the St. Francis did in my day. And I thought it was the same hotel. But so he did get off, and we did spend 2 days together.
It must have been difficult because... I mean, it's difficult enough for someone who's been married for a while, but to be very newly married.
Freshly married. In fact, I would think I was about the only nurse that was married when I was over there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this Major Lasasso took me under his wing because he didn't want anything to happen to me while I was overseas.
Oh.
Since I was just newly married, he wanted to be sure that I was well chaperoned all the time. And I do believe that's why the other squadron leader, mention her name, but I think that's why she took really offense to his treatment of both Eileen and I.
And he was very, like a little bit of favoritism.
I think that's what he thought. He thought maybe it might have been a little bit of favoritism.
Uh-huh.
And that's my career as far as getting into the flight nurse at Hickey Field. And I believe I explained to you what happened when we got in that night. Of course, we took a boat.
Yeah, you mentioned taking the ship.
We took the ship, and I was seasick. Can you imagine? I was seasick. But to get back to Bowman Field, you may want me to go back. And we did go. It was Maxwell Air Force, I think, that we went to, where we had to go into a chamber.
I had heard heard something about
And I'm
that.
Trying to remember, but I think we had to go into this chamber, and it would be in such a manner that it would be like being in an airplane and dropping, and a pressure chamber changes, you know, in the atmosphere. Yeah. And you had to pass that. We had two girls that didn't pass.
Today, I know the name they give it is the altitude chamber. Does that sound familiar?
It might be. It's probably the same thing.
Probably
it might
the
be the same thing.
Thing.
It's it simulates the atmosphere when you're flying on an airplane to see if you can go over these mountains. And of course, I was thinking about Europe, and I thought, oh, this is wonderful. You know, I'll get used to this, and I passed it and had no trouble.
No problems at all. But then you got on the ship, and you got.
Well, I know what happened. As I said, I think what happens is you never, never, never volunteer in the service for anywhere you want to go first. You always put where you want to go first last, because you invariably, at that time, you invariably got sent to the bottom of the list.
Where was it that you had really wanted to go?
I wanted to go to European theater because I had a brother over there.
Oh, so you would have preferred your flying assignment
to the European, and that's where I signed. I signed up. They put out a sheet and asked us to sign the sheet, and of course I put European theater first and South Pacific second. So guess where I got sent to?
To the South Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
So your plan backfired.
So I've always said after that never volunteer.
So y'all wound up on this ship.
On the ship.
When did you actually then arrive?
I think it was December the 10th.
So it was Christmas.
Before Christmas.
And this was still 43.
43.
And the place that you arrived at?
Was in Pearl Harbor. I think we came into the harbor. Because Pearl Harbor is right across from Hickam.
Uh-huh.
And we came into there, and it was at nighttime, real late. And there must have been there were thousands of our boys that were on that ship, but they were down below deck, and I felt so sorry for them because it was so hot and humid down there. They were transporting many of our soldier boys from San Francisco to there. And as I said, it took us, I think, 5 to 7 days. And we never had lights on or anything, you know, at nighttime. Of course, it was blackout. It was blackout. And when we came in, it was blacked out, so we couldn't see anything. When we came in, it was dark, and they had these, we called them reconnaissance trucks that were there waiting for us with our luggage, and we dragged, and they brought us to these three houses that we were split up into six people.
And this was at Hickam.
This was at Hickam Field. And
did you know at that time that you were members of the 812?
I believe so. I think we got that assignment when we left Hickam Field.
Like when you at Bowman Field before you actually left?
Well, it was after we graduated from Bowman Field.
Uh-huh.
I think we were there, as I said, from October. We worked. Now, the reason I knew we were going to go to South Pacific and we'd be the 812th, because he said we were to replace a squadron, but then they decided that we were needed over there besides the 809.
And augmented
and
two squadrons.
We had gone into, we worked in the base hospitals, and we took courses at the college at the University of Kentucky.
Okay, this is and like when you
took a flight. Yeah, we had to take 3 months, almost 3 months. It would have been October to 1st of December, 2 months of medical, all tropical diseases and all types of tropical medicine and things. We had to take, so we knew then we were going to go over to the South Pacific.
That was a hint, wasn't it?
That was
even
a big hint. Big hint, and I thought, well, that's where we're going. So we knew then that's where we were going, and we did. I think I found the paper where it said we graduate on the 1st of October, and we left for, I think it was the 10th of December.
The specific date isn't all that important.
Oh, isn't it? All right.
No, it just gives us some idea of the year, and sometimes
that was 1943.
You know,
yeah, it was would have been December that we got there. I know that it was before, because every one of our flights. Here it is, December 10th, 1943.
So, having married right after the flight nurse course, and what name was it that you flew under? It was Joe.
Neighbors. I had my name changed before I went overseas.
So
that was my married name.
Yeah. You started to mention something about after you had arrived, at Hickam, and I guess you had gotten somewhat settled into your quarters.
We had gotten into our quarters, and it was nice because they had allowed Eileen and I to be roommates. And we were tired because we got in late the night before, and we were tired the next day, and we thought, oh, well, we'll just browse around, take a shower, and, you know, just not do anything, just unpack some of our things. And I got this phone call, and I was half asleep, and it said that we were invited to Colonel Smith's afternoon tea, that he would like to meet all the new nurses, you know, flight nurses. I thought, well, fine. I said, we'll come over later. I said, or said something to that extent, and went back to sleep. Well, the next thing I knew, somebody was knocking on our door and telling us, did we not know that we were invited to? And I said, yes, but I said, we just didn't feel like going. She said, well, it wasn't an invitation. It's a command performance. You must go to this. And I thought, oh, my. So then they said we had to get dressed in uniform, full uniform, mm-hmm. with our caps and all, and make an appearance, which we did. And we had our pictures taken. Colonel Smith had a movie camera going, and you had to go up and talk to him and tell him who you were and where you were staying and if you liked the islands and various things. And make general information, you know, general talk, uh-huh. and then we left. So I didn't stay but an hour, I don't think.
Well, that was at least the amount that was required by protocol, I would guess.
Well, I would have liked to have stayed 10 minutes and gone, but we had to stay about that, you know.
Was that the first that you learned about these command performances?
Yes. In fact, there were three people there that today are very famous at the same time. Mm-hmm. There was Joe DiMaggio, and there was Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan?
Ronald Reagan was there, and Henry Fonda. Three people who were in the service, USO, were there at 7. And
afternoon tea.
Afternoon tea. And I never got their autograph because I didn't think they were that important then.
Oh, that's kind of funny.
We having an air alert?
Okay, before we had to break to check on that noise outside, you were talking about your three celebrities that you had met at this afternoon tea. Your first day or so on the island.
That's right, it was. I think I told you who they were, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Can you imagine they all, and at that time we didn't realize they were celebrities.
But we don't usually know that at the time. It's much later we wish we had gotten the autographs or shook their hands.
We had met them.
Or, you know, had some small talk with them or something like that. So I get the feeling that even so far in what you've been talking about, you must have felt pretty good about being a flight nurse during the war. I mean, you got the chance to do what you had been
doing. What I had dreamed about doing, and I really did. I really felt that I was doing a service for our boys over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I couldn't wait. You know, this is what I was sent over there for, and I thought, well, this will be wonderful now. I'll get to pick up, go down and fly down and pick up our wounded off the islands and bring them back.
Uh-huh.
Which we did. And, of course, my first island was Canton. And I thought I had a picture here of it, but I couldn't find it. It may be somewhere else, and I'll have to look. But this was a little station that was down below. It was a desert. It was, it was an atoll, and I don't think it was more than a mile in circumference.
Mm-hmm.
Circumference. And it was below the equator, and it was hot. And we had a little, what I would call a little Quonset hut, you know, the metal Quonset huts that they used. And that was our medical building, and that's where, when we would fly to one of the islands, which were it wasn't Kwajalein or anything, it was islands further down. And I have now forgotten the names of some of them, but they had never seen white women. And this one flight that I remember, this blonde nurse, I think her name was Sophie, she flew down. She was an 809 squadron girl, and she and I flew down to the island. Well, we got to this island, and the natives were shocked when we walked out of the airplane. They didn't seem to mind me so much. I think they knew, you know, they saw me, and I was a woman, and I was white. But when they saw her blonde hair, they all got down on their knees and would not get up.
Oh, really?
And finally, when the pilot of the ship took us over to the chief of the tribe, and he invited us to come in and sit down. And I thought I had a picture of their tent. And it may be in here somewhere.
You
might find it later. And we sat in that tent, and they were very nice. The native women were sitting, weaving with palm. They looked like palm leaves, you know. They were making mats, and their beds were straw. And they all lived in one, the whole family and tribe lived in one big tent. Mm-hmm. And the sides rolled up in the daytime, and then at nighttime they put the sides down. And then the smaller groups, other tribes, they had other smaller tents around. but the large tent with the chief in it and his family, and if there were 16 of them in the family, if I remember correctly, they all lived in the one big tent. I can still remember Sophie. She was shocked. She didn't know what she was going to do. And she came over to me and she said, Joe, what happens now? What happens if they decide they're going to come over? And they did. They went over and they touched her hair, touched mine, and went over to hers to see if there was a difference. Mine was black and hers was blonde.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, she was fair and blue-eyed, and here I am with dark hair and brown eyes. And but they were very nice to us. They gave us little gifts of flowers, you know, they brought to us. And so we had brought beads and things down because this is what our pilot had told us to take down there. He says, take them.
He said,
because, oh yes, we took them little gifts because they, this is how they were nice to the Americans that came to the island, see.
Oh, I see.
So there was a nice trade there.
Now, when you were on that island, were there any patients on it that you were picking up?
No, we'd stopped there for, to go on to another island to pick up patients.
I see.
And I think, I can't remember now why the pilot had decided to stop, but I don't know whether he had, he thought he had plane trouble or something, but there was a little landing area, and that's why we stopped.
Oh.
And then we did on this, and I can't, it might have been a refueling station for all I know right now. You know, I've forgotten.
Yeah.
It's been so long ago. But I do remember taking trinkets. We always took trinkets with us to go to the islands. Even if it was on Tarawa or Saipan, there were all the natives there, and we always brought them something. And of course, we always had, cigarettes and beer and liquor for our boys on the islands. If they had wounded boys and they needed cigarettes or writing paper, we always took them down because at Hickam Field, we were able to get all of this stuff at a very flat rate, and these boys were not able to pick up anything.
Yeah, because there was a lot more on
there were a lot
Hawaiian
more
Island, certainly, than there were on these smaller islands.
That's right, on the smaller islands.
Pacific, so y'all
that's
were
right, so they would always ask us to bring them down newspapers, cigarettes, shaving equipment, because even with the Red Cross sending it, they couldn't send it that often, and they didn't have, you know, there was too many boys that were wounded. Even the boys that weren't wounded, the soldiers that were on all these islands were begging us for different things.
They couldn't get their shaving
equipment. So our duffel bag would be packed with all this stuff to be dropped off at all the islands, which we didn't mind doing. We rather enjoy doing it.
When y'all had arrived, you know, initially at Hickam, did you start air vacuuming patients right away?
Yes, we did.
So you weren't one of those groups who kind of sat on their hands waiting for...
No, as I said, they sent us down to Canton, and then from there we went on and started from Kwajalein, Eniwetok. We went down to New Guinea. We picked up patients from New Guinea. And I remember one time getting to Australia and coming back with some patients. I don't think we had as many as we did after we started on the islands that were bombed. Once we got onto Tarawa and Saipan, they were terrible. You barely got a load of patients in the plane to take back, then you had to go back down and pick up some more.
So you were really busy.
So we were really busy at those days. Uh-huh. Yes, there were many, many times that we never got a break, as I said.
How did you get your stamina up?
we used to get up. Every once in a while, the Navy would invite us out to dinner. We hated rations so bad. The Navy would invite us over on their ship to come over and to have dinner. And that was the best thing. They would give us all the fresh fruit, vegetables, and meat. And we'd sell our soul. And we'd tell this to the command. We'd say this to Major
Lasasso
for an invitation to get over there and smell fresh brewed coffee. Because, as I said, all we got on our planes was the sea rations. And those eggs were terrible, those powdered eggs. To this day, I can't eat an egg.
Oh, really? Not even a fresh egg?
Not even a fresh egg.
It just
made me say, and spam, I'll never touch.
Yeah.
See, I won't eat spam. And but we started our flights immediately after we got there. And as I said, we had fun when we would come in. But see, none of the girls would be there all at the same time. There might be two or three girls that come in maybe the day or two before, and then when you got there, they would be ready to go out. So you can't say you had much of a home life or a home, you know, at the base at Hickam Field, because we didn't get to stay there that long.
You never quite knew maybe
how long we'd be there.
No,
you always
plans for activities.
You couldn't go out. You couldn't do much of anything. I can still remember. I think I went to play golf one day with this officer, and he. We went over to Rogers. I think it was Rogers Air Force Base, and they had a golf course there. And I had never golfed, and I was left-handed, so he taught me how to golf that day. And when I came back, someone said, you got a call to go back out. I said, but I just came in, and And they said, well, you forgot to leave your name and tell them you were here.
Oh.
Of course, that was the 809th squadron leader again.
Yeah.
So I did go back out. And, of course, as I said, I was always into trouble. That's terrible to say that.
Did you get into trouble for having been, like, out on a golf course and they expected you to, to go out on a
They expected me to report in. And I should have done. And I realized it was my own fault.
Oh.
No, it was my own fault. I just never thought I'd be gone that long. And it really, I blame myself because... And she had a right to send me right out on a flight.
So unless you reported in after a flight, they couldn't know that you had just come in
That's
off
right.
of a flight, and they might call you too soon.
That's right.
To go back
That's
out.
True. Say so.
Oh.
You had to report in, and of course, when we came in, as I said, it was very nice. We had some good Red Cross staff people who always had fresh pineapple out at the airbase waiting for us, and when we came in, they'd have fresh juice and coffee and anything we wanted as we came in. Then we'd go into our squadron leader and report in, and then go back to our quarters and get ourselves ready, get our change of clothes. We'd do our own laundry. We did our own laundry, wash your own uniform, and you'd be back out again. Oh, that's about it.